Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 298 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On today's episode, we're doing our trivia as usual, talking a little bit about movies, got some remakes, a lot of remakes coming at you, discussing that, along with 9 movie reviews from 10 Cloverfield Lane all the way to Sicario, our streaming online pick of the week, and trailers. Got a lot of those today, including X-Men, Ben-Hur, Now You See Me 2, and the latest from Tim Burton, Blake Lively, and the gang of NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. Blake Lively. Yeah, that's always a fun one. My goodness, we'll get to that soon. Can't wait to talk about that. Hey, let's get into this at the top and talk trivia. I don't know if you watch Saturday Night Live like I watch.
I don't.
In fact, I know you don't watch it.
I don't.
Have you ever watched it consistently or just kind of picked it up here?
Yeah. You know, I watched it in the 90s. I really liked even the reruns that they had during the 90s. They used to play reruns from the 80s and stuff, and I liked those.
That was a Comedy Central staple in the 90s,
yeah,
honestly.
But it's just been, I don't know, it's a bit much for me to watch now, I guess. I don't know why.
I'm a devoted fan, always have been. Stayed with it through the rough times. And don't ask me why, because even now there's skits that absolutely tank. But it seems to be going on an upswing for me lately. But I've gone through a lot of eras with this show, and it's always been kind of a comfort blanket. But regardless, there is one actor who has – I mean, the most hosted of all time is Alec Baldwin at 16 times, okay? But there's an actor who had the record for a long time. He's hosted 13 times, and every time I hear that, it surprises me because you never expect that this particular actor
– Channing Tatum.
Well, he's getting there. He hosted, I think, twice. One time – maybe it was just once, and it was so bad. Every skit had, like, dancing involved. They were like, dance, monkey, dance. It was bad. They didn't have to do with him. Even Chris Hemsworth they used better.
That's ingenious. Yeah.
There's an actor whose film is in the top 5 right now. And he has hosted SNL 13 times. Do you know who this is?
I don't even know what movies are in the top 5 right
now. Oh, okay. All right. Great way to head into this movie.
You got me already on that one. Did you tell
we're not doing box office ace anymore?
I'm not paying attention. If we were not talking about Zootopia, then I have no idea.
All right, well, I'm actually going to kick this one out to our listeners out there. If you have an answer to this trivia question, we have a small giveaway. We have a promotion going, Olive Films, olivefilms.com. Check them out. They gave us a couple of copies of the film Roar, the 1981 film starring Tippi Hedren, Melanie Griffith. This is the famous movie with live animals on set that scalped Jan de Bont, the cinematographer. We're giving these away to 2 listeners that have the correct trivia question answered for that. Go to our Facebook page, moviemavericks.com, Facebook page. Answer on the Facebook page if you got the answer for that. We'll pick one of the winners.
What is that? Facebook.com/moviemavericks, right?
There you go. Yeah, exactly. It's our page there. And let's see if you got the answer for that. So an actor whose film is in the top 5 at the box office right now, who has hosted SNL 13 times. Answer that, and we'll pick a random winner and tell you next episode who won.
Knowing Jason, this is an impossible question to answer.
No, it's really not. It's really not. Especially if you watch Saturday Night Live. I'm sure there's
some. There is someone in the top 5 who has hosted SNL a record 13 times.
There is. I guarantee you. And it's not Channing Tatum. All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about movies.
Oh. Is that what we're doing here? Why?
Sometimes.
That is an odd left turn on that one. All
right. Right. Thought I was going to zig and I zagged. What do you say? You know I'm a big Burt Reynolds fan, sadly enough.
You love mustache rides. We know.
Oh, man. It's out there in the world now. Right? I'm just a good old boy. I mean, it's the Dukes of Hazzard fan of me that comes out when I watch this kind of shit. I wish we all still talked on CBs.
He is fun.
It's a fun way of watching movies. You know, that it's like pure shit, but it's like it's just kind of like genre shit. But hey, they're redoing the Cannonball Run. Can you believe this? The writers of Tropic Thunder are going back and redoing really, it's like Rat Race was the last kind of successful movie like this. Do you remember that movie from like 15 years ago?
I didn't know that was successful.
I think it did fairly well at the box office.
Nobody remembers that movie. I mean, no one's seen that fucking movie.
It's unmemorable trash. That's the kind of shit that Cannonball is. It's a bunch of
famous
faces that are going. Basically, it's like a cross-country demolition derby type movie. And there was a slew of you. Remember Speed Zone with John Candy?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that was like the unofficial Cannonball Run 3. There's one called Million Dollar Cash fucking Million Dollar Race that like from 87 that there's a very famous stuntman, Stu. Oh, I can't recall his name. He was in Stick, the Burt Reynolds movie, the guy he throws off the building at the end there. He died in a motorcycle accident on that film. It's basically what it's known for. But they had like this promotion in real life where they were giving $1 million away to a fan that found the money. There was like a movie real life promotion, Million Dollar Mystery Tour or some shit like that. That should be the better trivia question. Fuck the SNL question. You name that movie.
I never got too much into these racing for ridiculousness movies. I mean, I guess I'm the only one.
You'd have to quote like Roger Ebert's review of Cannonball 2, I think it was, when he says something like, you know, cars hitting each other is not inherently funny. Cars chasing each other is not funny. Like, he didn't understand what the appeal was of
this. I would agree with him, because a lot of these movies are just shots of cars driving and people kind of turning the wheel and then running into things. And it's not really, especially for being the time period from where it comes from, you know, it's not really that spectacular to look at.
Oh, it's visually appalling. I watched Cannonball 1 and Cannonball 2 recently, including...
They're so cheap.
They're horrendously cheap.
I mean, something like you know, Mad Max or Road Warrior stuff just puts these things to fucking shame.
Well, even something like Death Race from Paul Anderson from a couple of years
well,
ago.
But these are that's newer, to be fair. I'm trying to say something at least within this era.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Even the Smokey movies put these to shame.
Even go like 10, 15 years, you know, past this and stuff's like way better.
I do want to see that Smokey and the Bandit documentary basically about Burt Reynolds and Hal Needham, the director of those films, and six of his movies, all the Cannonball movies, Smokey, Stroker Race, and a couple more there, called The Bandit, premiering this week at South by Southwest.
I think you just said Stroker Race.
I did say Stroker Race. Have you ever seen that one? I like it.
I have, yeah.
Stroker Race is awesome because if you really watch that movie and then you watch Talladega Nights, the Ricky Bobby story after, you realize that Will Ferrell is directly ripping off almost scene by scene Stroker Race and doing it beautifully as well. That's a great double bill for anybody out there and a great drinking game. You won't make it through Stroker Race, I guarantee you, if you're drinking. What do we got here? Oh, Daisy Ridley. What was her name in Star
Wars? I like her. Ray?
Ray. That's right. What's the guy's name? What was Kylo Ren's real name?
What was his real name?
Ben? Isn't it Ben? Wasn't it
Kylo?
I just have Harrison Ford screaming Ben in my mind's eye.
I don't know. I don't remember then. I mean, Finn was the black guy's name, right? The
Finn
Stormtrooper
was Finn. Was the new Luke Skywalker.
She was Rey, and he was – there was someone named Ren, wasn't there? Oh, Kylo Ren. They call him Ren.
Star Wars is still playing five showings a day on one screen at the theater down the street here. And it's not like showing second-run movies. It's like all new releases, and it's got Star Wars still kicking. Mm-hmm. And this lady today with this elderly senior ticket buyer bought a ticket for it. I thought, is she just waited to like the 25th week to go see it? She thought the crowd's died down?
No, dude.
Or has she seen it for like the fifth time?
She just left her house when it came out. She just finally got to the theater.
Yeah, right.
No, she's old. Takes her a while.
No, I think that she was either a huge fan or concerned that crowds were just still going to be too big. And this was maybe a Monday morning was a good time to catch
it. Well, I mean, was she in like a Princess Leia costume or something, you know?
No, but she did buy the refillable popcorn, which leads me to believe that she planned to suit her ass there for a while and dig in.
She's a professional.
Yeah. I think she was movie hopping. I'll tell you what. You go to an early matinee showing.
Oh, for sure. You're watching something else.
I'm telling you this. You realize that older people theater hop more than younger people do.
Fuck yeah, that's the only reason you go to an early matinee.
Like spend there all day there?
Yes, to theater hop.
I contemplated it. In fact, I was going to sneak into Deadpool
when you
after.
Were a kid. And you went to the theaters early like that. What was the reason?
Oh yeah, all day.
Yeah.
Now, as an adult, you can't just spend all day in a theater. I mean, I'd love to, believe me.
Oh, you can. It's possible.
Yeah, I know. There was a slight inclination to do the like.
I mean, maybe not with these movies, but you could.
No, I almost did Cloverfield, Deadpool, and London Must Fall, but then I thought like my.
It's not a bad lineup.
I know it wasn't, but it was going to be like a 10 to like 8:30 at night thing, and I was like, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm an adult. I gotta grow up.
Get too old. Yeah.
I mean, I love fucking movies. But yeah. I'll catch one of those on DVD. So we got Daisy Ridley here, Rey of Star Wars, who apparently is going to be the next Tomb Raider.
She's thinking about it.
She's considering it.
I'm okay with that casting. I just don't know that I need another movie.
I didn't think the first two were worth a shit, so I can't imagine this one's.
Well, I liked the first one. I didn't. I really hated the second one.
How can you say you liked the first one? Like, what about the first one did you like? Because the robot shit's terrible.
It was stupid fun.
Ending set piece with the sundial is stupid as fuck.
I can't really defend it, but I do like it. I do like the stupid robot part, and I do like. I realize how bad that it sounds that I say that. You know, it's like someone saying they like the Wild Wild West. You know, I get it.
No, I get it too, but the thing is, part two is just as bad. So I don't understand how you could like part
because
one and hate part
I don't
two.
Know. I don't know.
In fact,
I think
part two is a little bit more glossier and easier to get through, even though it's dog shit.
Really, I find it. Shit. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Honestly.
Splitting hairs here. Regardless, I don't.
Yeah. You really are.
I'm not really fully behind any more of these game movies. I think I'm done. To be honest with you, Tomb Raider, fine game. You know, they keep making them. As far as I can tell, they're the same fucking game they keep making. So what would make me believe that the movie would be any different, that I would want to watch it? And why was it necessary to be a Tomb Raider thing? You know, why can't we do like a female Indiana Jones thing and just have it be its own thing?
Because they got the idea that there is a built-in audience somehow. And I'm not sure if there really is. Anymore, at least. This came when the first one came out. It came out in that summer where I remember there was kind of this excitement still about video game movies. They hadn't overplayed their hand yet. It was this and the Final Fantasy all animation film. Remember that with the stop, with the actual photorealistic guys, which I saw one time in a theater and was kind of amazed by, but have never thought about again until I just mentioned it now on the air.
It's not a good movie.
Yeah, it's really not. But at the time, it was kind of, you know, there was a fan anticipation
for it. Yeah,
it
was really neat to see.
But since then, there, you know, Resident Evil 1 came out, which I thought was really good. And then we just almost gone downhill steadily from there. And I think one of the low points was Doom. And I always think about that as the cash grab aspect of the video game movie genre. Not to mention the Uwe Boll ones that have just filled
but
up screens.
To but, be fair, I really do like Uwe Boll's Far Cry.
That is the good one. I'll say that. But that we saw Alone in the Dark, and that's laughable.
Which is terrible.
To this day. Yeah. Make it through the first 30 minutes of that and tell me what's going on. And you can win a copy of Roar.
at least Christian Slater's in the entire movie.
Yeah, I'll give him that. But so is Tara Reid. I'm pretty sure she's on pills most of that movie.
I forgot
or doesn't
she
understand
was
her dialogue
that.
Exactly.
She races probably, through it. Yeah. All right. Let's go on. Because we got some Indiana Jones. Speaking of the female Indiana Jones. So finally, there are people out there who are kind of seeing my way that people are just too old sometimes to be reviving roles, right? And there's been a little bit of backlash of the Indy 5 announcement that Harrison Ford's coming back as Indiana Jones. Of course, you know, this is slated for several years from now, so he's going to be like mid-70s by the time the movie comes out or even gets made, right? Mm-hmm. When is old too old? In the last Indiana Jones movie, he was walking around looking like a grandpa. I mean, literally.
And that's going to be, and by the time this film comes out, that will have been 11 years past that.
I mean, there's a range of movement that he literally can't make anymore, and it's called normal walking, and he can't do it anymore.
To be fair, we don't know what the story aspect of this. It could be he's almost narrating a tale. We don't have any clue yet what the story aspiration.
That's
I'm
true.
A little bit...
I mean, I'd be fine with that, like playing like the indie, like the, you know. I mean, I think he's even too old to do the Sean Connery bit, you know. But even playing a role similar to that in this movie, I think would be great, and let someone younger, you know, fill in someone that has at least. It's a nice way to pass the torch, right? To have him in a movie while he's here and available to be in a movie to pass the torch, which I thought was the last one.
He's probably looking around and saying, hey, they're doing Terminator 5 with Arnold. You know, you got to give Stallone credit for saying no to the next Rambo because he just thought physically it's just not in him anymore to be that animal, you know, to be that look. And he gave it one last shot, and I think we got a great ending to that
awesome.
In 2008. He wasn't yet past that date, maybe in some respects, but still could pull it off one last time, a great goodbye to that character. Unfortunately, I think that even Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg realized that Crystal Skulls left a terrible taste in people's mouth. And outside, and really I think more troubling than Ford coming back, regardless of his age, is that David Cope is coming back to write this, the writer of Crystal Skulls. Now, maybe freed of Lucas's involvement, because there's no mention of George Lucas anywhere in this press release. This is a Disney product, so it doesn't surprise me that Lucas has said, you know, take all my shit and just go with it. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
So maybe they're going to be free to kind of do something that they have in mind. Because I wonder if the Lucas influence was really what held back the Crystal Skulls. Because I know the bit about the refrigerator was Lucas's idea, and a lot of that.
Yeah, man, but it did. Crystal Skull did feel very Lucas-y, as Lucas is now. You know, very silly, very childish, very outlandish.
I don't mind Crystal Skulls. I got to be honest. I don't have the hatred toward it that everybody else does.
Really?
I know. I don't
understand. I can't like Tomb Raider, but you can like Crystal Skull.
I know, right? I'll say this about Indiana Jones and Crystal Skulls. I was so excited to see that movie. I saw it on opening day. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say I waited because you don't wait anymore for movies. I saw it and I fell asleep in the fucking
thing. I understand that. But that was my whole thing. I waited for this movie too. And by the time I saw it, it was such a fucking letdown. And I literally... The minute he landed that full refrigerator thing, I turned it off, you know, and I've seen it since all the way through. But, you know, I don't know. It's rare for me to turn a movie off. It's got to be really bad. And that movie is just that bad. It's a huge letdown.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, right? Am I wrong? I can't be that wrong. The internet agrees with me, so haha.
The filmmaking community at large agrees with you. And
there's one time. There's got to be one time that happens.
A lot of people view episode 2 in the same way that they view Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skulls, Indiana 4. Like, mm-hmm. It was an unnecessary chapter. Why go through all the effort to even do that? And by the time that this one comes out, we're talking 30 years since the last good Indiana Jones movie. And it just makes you wonder why, in a lot of respects. And why not try the younger version? Chris Pratt, you know, that idea wasn't a bad idea. I think that's
A bit too on the nose, though, for me at this point. I would rather prefer an unknown at this point. Something to come in. Because Chris Pratt, I feel like Chris Pratt is already established now. Especially after the Jurassic World thing. Like, it's... putting him in this would almost feel too... I don't know, too commercial almost. Does that make sense? I mean, after Guardians of the Galaxy and Jurassic World, isn't he just kind of like the guy? I don't know. It would be like putting Ryan Reynolds in this. Yeah, it's like okay, like I understand why you picked him. Like, can we get something new, something that I haven't seen yet? Let's make Indiana Jones exciting again.
All right, news filtered out of the Maze Runner 3 set this week that star Dylan O'Brien had seriously injured himself. This is the biggest accident to a lead actor I can remember since the fatal shooting of Brandon Lee back in 1993 on the set of The Crow in North Carolina. This happened as – I kind of read sketchy reports here. I read on Variety that he was run over by a car during a stunt gone awry, and I've also heard that he fell off the back of a moving train for a sequence, a special effects sequence. Either way, he's broke multiple bones, according to some reports, or fractured his face, his orbital socket. Really, really gnarly, though. The director's come out and apologized and said that, you know, he seeks a healthy recovery. He feels he's letting everyone down. He's really upset. OSHA gets involved in something like this because this is a workplace accident, and they didn't find any necessarily wrongdoing, I read. But still, a major setback to the production and kind of a scary thing to happen to a lead actor, right? I mean, this is huge news, I think.
Yeah, I mean... You know, thank God the Divergent series is doing shittily now because maybe it doesn't matter.
They kill the lead actor, right?
Yeah. With these, these teen dystopian, futuristic movies taking a bit of a downturn here. But this is obviously not good.
Pretty serious news, you know? I feel.
And if it was more... I don't know. You have to admit that at this point, they're probably pretty safe on set.
Well, especially with the lead actor. My goodness.
Well, because of everything that's been happening, though, recently
Sarah
as well.
Sarah Jones case.
So you know that the whatever this was probably just an honest mistake, you know, which is gives you an idea of what the hell were they doing. Must have been really crazy, though. But this is why they don't let these guys do their own stunts.
Yeah, but then you think you got Tom Cruise hanging off the side of a fucking 747, right?
I know. So,
or off the side of a
but this
a
is why this is why they don't want him to do that. He's in a good position to demand, being able to do that, but they don't let a lot of people do this.
I wonder how complicated the sequence was and how who's falling.
He could have just fallen, you know. Yeah, if he fell, if you fall in the wrong place and you can't get up in time, then maybe you get hit by a car. Or if you do just accidentally fall off the back of a train, you know, like, yeah, you could sustain these types of injuries just with a simple accident.
Yeah, very serious, though. I think the case that comes to most people's mind is the Brandon Lee on set incident. But the most tragic, you have to say, would probably be Vic Morrow and the child that were decapitated in the Twilight Zone film going awry back in 83. And that, you know, got John Landis was up, you know, for manslaughter charges because of that. He was held responsible. And Wes Ball, I mean, every director has to what's that? The director that's in Randall Miller is in prison right now because of the things that went on with the set and the crew member that was killed there. I believe her name was Sarah Jones.
Yeah, I think Sarah Jones was her name.
I know her name's Sarah because it's the you know Safety for Sarah movement that started after that. But the director could be very held responsible for this, and he's lucky that his star wasn't injured more. But you gotta wonder, you know, they get these things rigged so professionally, you know, then why not have a stunt double do some of this stuff? You're not Cruise. And as a side note, the Maze Runner films are better than the Divergent movies. Let's be honest. Right.
I don't know. That last
talk
one,
about splitting
the,
hairs.
The last one wasn't very good.
No, I know.
So,
but the first know. Three,
as far as I'm concerned,
haven't been very good. So,
I thought this was the third one.
Okay, well, the first two.
Is
stuff.
This the third one, or was the one that come out now? Was it the fourth one? Oh my god,
I can't recall. I feel like I've seen so many times she's been moping around. I kind of consider The Fault in Our Stars one, so I don't know if I never saw it, but I consider.
Oh, shame on you. That's a good movie.
I know everybody says that too, so there must be some validity to that statement. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with some reviews.
No, we want to...
what are we talking about?
Before the break, let's plug... you already did Olive Films, didn't you?
No,
we didn't talk about the movies, though, did we?
All right, let's talk about
our
buddies.
Let's talk about some movies that are coming out from them, yeah.
Our buddies over there at Olive Films, who supplied us with two copies of Roar to give away to faithful listeners that are going to answer that trivia question on our Facebook page. Check out olivefilms.com. They are a collective movie group out of Chicago that does they release older films on Blu-rays,
they're
kind of
like,
specialty films.
Yeah, I mean the best way I can put it is I think one of the most well-known ones out there right now is that Shout Factory that releases older movies, and these guys are kind of like those. They release older, I don't know, B movies, maybe cult movies at this point, you know,
which makes it interesting because I saw the list of films they have and some of my favorite movies. I mean, The Perfect Weapon with Jeff Speakman. I own this film outside of even having any contact with all the films. I bought that right off the bat. Monster right. Squad, once again. So I do own films. And some of these are – I know you're a big fan of Fatal Beauty because you talked about that on the show. Did you not?
I don't think so.
Or was it Jumpin' Jack Flash? I'm pretty sure you said
I love Jumpin' Jack Flash. But Fatal Beauty's, you know – Fatal Beauty is also a movie starring Whoopi Goldberg.
Right, but I do like What's the Worst That Can Happen, and they do have films that are available.
Yeah, What's the Worst That Can Happen.
Some of the good titles they do have coming out, to give them a shout out here. You can go to their Amazon, check it out for March or April. We have links on our Facebook page, and we'll have links on this podcast page.
Some stuff that everyone's heard of. Bandits, you know, the Bruce Willis movie.
I like Kill Me Again with Val Kilmer.
Kill Me Again, Clean Slate, the Dana Carvey movie. Obviously, you know, the classic Breaker, Chuck Norris.
But that is the CB craze.
I do mock, but I do like Breaker, so I can't mock too much. I just mock because, well, really, you're mocking fun, right? I mean, that movie's fun to watch because it's a crummy B movie that's old, you know?
And it holds up still because it has all those B movies. It's a drive-in circuit film. That's why it's fun. But yeah, check out olivefilms.com for the latest release there. Like I said, we'll have links to their Amazon page in case you like any of those titles for future purchase on our Movie Mavericks podcast page. Let's take a break.
All right, Kristen, I am so excited that you've decided to do a podcast with me, but what are we going to do a podcast about? There's so many other movie podcasts. We got to do something original.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. What about something like that?
That's just kid stuff. What do we want to do that for?
Did you know that The Avengers is a Disney movie? Or that Pulp Fiction is a Disney movie?
Pulp Fiction is not a Disney movie.
It's technically owned by Miramax, which is part of Disney.
We are still going to talk about the Disney animated movies, though, right?
I thought you said that was kid stuff.
Well, you know, I've got two kids. I got to be a good dad and stuff.
So be sure to subscribe to the Walt Sent Me podcast, where we discuss the various subsidiaries of the Walt Disney Studios, including the animated movies.
It's available on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts. And I swear, it's not kid stuff.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Okay, we're back.
All right, now that we fumbled through our plug, we can get to the meat of the show to talk about our reviews.
Hey, they also got Uptown Girls. I can keep going all day. I got movies you guys are going to want.
We got them. You, when you aim it, we got them for you over here. We got exactly. Batman and Superman. We got everything we want.
Well, they don't have that one yet. Give them like 20 or 30 years. All the films will release Batman versus Superman. If you want to wait for that special, I don't even know what it'll be then. It'll be triple ray disc sets. Yeah, right. I don't know what
triple
the hell.
Hologram features.
Yeah.
All right, so we got reviews. What did I see here? I saw 10 Cloverfield Lane, and you know this is getting great reviews, right? Everybody out there, it's got like a 90% Rotten Tomatoes approval rating.
Does it deserve it?
It does. It's really good.
I really want to hate this movie.
I did too. I went in kind of like irritated that I was even seeing it. You know, I hate to say that because you're supposed to go in with like a clean bill.
Well, then
you go in there, but it's good, man. It's efficient.
It's
too
good. You're saying. I got one question then. The Cloverfield name, does it earn it? Does it deserve it? Does it fucking matter?
How do I talk about this without spoiling this movie?
Really?
Okay. Let's start off with
that.
The top.
Already is sounds
the,
good.
The acting in this movie is phenomenal. I think you'll love this movie when you see it. I'm really interested to hear your opinion of it because you like this shit more than I do typically. This what they're doing in this movie are usually the tropes that you like because every time you think they're trotting out a trope, they go totally there's not a lot of like when you think like, well, why don't you do this? She does this. And the girl in it, I'm not sure what her name is, but she resembles a very young Sigourney Weaver, especially at times when she's sweaty and crawling through tight spaces. I thought this is almost like an aliens type young Sigourney Weaver look she has. And John Goodman, it's almost like a cliche now to say how good John Goodman is. It's
I know, right?
How good Jeff Bridges is. He is so fucking good in this movie. It's
Mary Elizabeth Winstead is the girl.
And I don't think she's of any note previously. And the guy who plays Emmett,
the third character, is
excellent as well. But Goodman,
I mean,
she is.
People may know her from things.
But Goodman should be slotted in for Best Supporting Actor for this, at least a nomination. Definitely a Golden Globe nomination for this. He is that good in this movie. And this is like, it's almost like Room, you know, that movie that was just out mixed with like a very, very good episode of Tales from the Crypt is the best way I can describe this movie. Something that you would expect from, you know, what's weird about these J.J. Abrams produced movies now is that like Spielberg in the 80s, anything he even produced kind of looks like it could have been from Spielberg. This all looks like it could have even been from Abrams' own hand. And this foregoes any found footage, shaky cam, bullshit like that, which they could have very easily done had it, you know, cause it's all in a bunker basically. And they could have used a cam that was set up. Yeah, exactly, because it would have taken away from the performances, which are top-notch, and the dialogue is very, very good, and effective use of sound design. That's almost, I think, a theater experience because of the sound design. Even the way that the title cards are intercut with a major event in the very beginning. Interestingly done, and didn't overstay its welcome. It's fairly lean at about an hour and 40 minutes, but the last 10 to 15 minutes of this movie are going to sway your opinion one way or another is what I'm going to leave it until you see it. So go with it like that. I'm giving this my highest recommendation. I thought really a first-rate thriller, a character study and a thriller, almost a stage play at times, but more efficient than even Hateful Eight was with its little one set, all characters in a room situation. So I give this one 4 stars, actually. I really, really enjoyed this movie. And I liked the first Cloverfield. No one else. You did too, right?
I love Cloverfield, yeah.
Yeah, so did I. Everyone else hated it. For a found footage movie, that one does not bother me. I don't know why.
I don't know. People did not hate Cloverfield.
I've heard nothing but shit about Cloverfield.
Really? I don't know, man. A lot of people really like Cloverfield.
It was better than the last Godzilla. Hell, it was better than both Godzilla movies.
It's better than most found footage stuff, to be honest with you. It's been the only thing that I know of that has really lasted, stayed the course, and the only thing that hasn't been just raped and pillaged. Obviously, here's the first sequel to it, and it's not even a sequel.
Interesting.
Or maybe it is kind of weird, you know? Yeah.
It definitely, this all exists in that lost universe, in a sense, where things are. I mean, it's hard to explain. I want you to see this fucking movie. So when this comes out, we'll be talking about this again. All right, let's talk about Crimson Peak, because I saw this. You've seen this. I told you that I don't usually go for these kind of period horror movies, but this one really worked for me for some reason. And I don't think you felt the same.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right. I didn't dislike the movie. I just felt that it was kind of obvious, you know? I mean, it was very obvious as to what was going on. So you would just kind of sit, you're kind of just stuck waiting for this thing to unwind. And there were no, there were just no secrets, you know, even though it tried to come out and, you know,
very obvious brother sister type thing going, you know what
yeah
I mean?
It tried
very
to get obvious. You and stuff in certain areas and be like, oh wow, but you know, I don't particularly like these movies where the main character is just so boneheaded and dumb.
But the movie kind of pronounced what its intentions were in the first couple scenes there, when she's writing the book and the author said, oh, it's a ghost story. Well, you know, no, it's a love story.
Okay,
with ghosts.
But I don't know how that makes it any good.
I know, but I thought that the acting was compelling enough from Tom Hiddleston. I thought
the
was
acting's
really,
very
really good.
Yeah, I mean, Mia Wasikowski is very good. Jessica Chastain's great. Yeah, Tom Hiddleston. I mean, yeah, sure, of course.
But I will agree with you that the story is very bland, and I mean, almost
incredibly
a stunning banality
bland.
In a way. Particularly when Charlie Humane, where the kid's name is, comes into the picture, and you think, oh, he's showing up just to come free her and get killed at the same time here. And I do feel like a lot of that was a setup so that those beautiful shots of the white and the red clay and all that kind of stuff was you know, very much The Shining. But that movie is production designed to within an inch of its life.
Yeah, I will agree with you with The Shining thing, especially when it comes to, I don't know, you have to admit that Crimson Peak, you know, the title, and then the whole thing with the red clay, and then the on top of the mountain, and then the snow, and it looks like blood, right? That's kind of the whole. It feels like he came up with that idea.
And
specifically,
the story
I'm talking about
just...
Del Toro, yeah, and then kind of just went, oh, that's a great idea. You know, here's the stupid story for this great idea, and then I'm done.
Every time I watch a Del Toro movie, though, I forget that I like Del Toro movies because I resist watching them. And I really
don't like Del Toro movies.
I do, though. I thought Pacific Rim was great. I know you hated it.
It's not great. It's a terrible movie.
Oh, man. It just it tickles the 12-year-old inside of me. I swear to God.
Yeah, well, that's about the brain trust there that went into that movie.
It does. All right, let's talk about The Big Short. You got a chance to catch up with this Best Picture nominee. I put this on my top 10, my top three of the year. I went Revenant, Big Short, and Creed. What'd you think of The Big Short?
Not a fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you said
away.
That I would like this movie.
I really thought you would.
I thought this was just way too simplistic of a film. Like, nothing happens in this fucking movie. Not only that, the characters aren't interesting. And,
you didn't find Steve Carell's character interesting?
No. First of all, he doesn't do anything in the fucking movie. He just walks around being Michael Scott. You know, he's too Steve Carell. He just is to be in this, you know. And, you know, I felt the same way about the Christian Bale, you know, the Michael Burry character, who I think is really the most interesting character out of the whole group. And he really doesn't do anything. You know, these guys are investors. They invest. It's just not exciting.
I thought the storytelling outside of the character, the storytelling,
I thought the filmmaking was horrendous. You're out of your mind.
Get out of here,
please. All the fourth wall breaking, the stopping in the middle of everything. You know, you know this movie's fucking boring when they have to get celebrities to stop the movie and explain to you in some stupid way what's going on.
How else were they going to make this dull book palatable for anybody to watch?
This movie is exciting in and of itself, right? If this isn't exciting enough to stand on its own, then how is cutting it up like a madman, breaking the fourth wall, just doing all these stupid cutesy things gonna help it?
I thought that was the black comedy aspect. I thought this was a great black comedy.
I didn't find anything comedic about this.
Oh shit, when she's driving with the realtor. You know, very motivated seller, very motivated seller. And there's a lot of comedy in this, I thought, like particularly with
that has nothing to do with the film.
Carell's character walking in to the meeting, stating his piece and then bouncing. I mean, there's moments in this movie. I thought that was very deftly made. I can't believe you didn't thought that this was.
Man, I could do that all day long, right? I can have a guy come in, say some stupid shit and then leave, right? I have a character act like that, but it just didn't have any value to the story. It had no value to me watching it whatsoever. You know, here's a guy. This is an asshole. Okay. How does that play out for him? He's just an asshole. right?
But he was an asshole for the people.
No, he wasn't. That's the other thing about this movie. This movie does not make us take a stand, right? This movie is so fucking worried that you're going to find out that you're part of the problem, that you're the fucking moron who I know how many people watch this movie or the idiots that took the fucking, that took the bad debt, you know? The problem here is this movie tries to make these bankers and these guys all look like assholes. You know that people aren't like that, right? You know that not everyone was like these guys, like, oh, I was getting bonuses and doing this and fucking jerking off and I'm fucking all these women and doing all this stuff in my hot cars and shit. You know people aren't like that, right? So to paint an entire industry in that light and then to have the balls to shine the light on us as what, the illegal, the immigrant guy, I won't say illegal because I don't know if he was illegal, but the Mexican guy who's renting the house, and it's not even him, right? He's the poor sap who's getting screwed, and he's the guy that they're going to blame this on in the end, but it's his landlord who, you know, took the loan out on his dog's name, that's the asshole, and he's never in the fucking movie, right? It's the cheap way out, and I really think that, I don't know, I think the thing just falls apart to me at that point, you know, and these guys do nothing but make money. You know, that's their job as investors. They're not heroes in any way whatsoever. And that's why I really like the Michael Burry character because, you know, he wasn't portrayed as a hero. He wasn't trying to be a hero. Whereas the Mark Baum guy was just a fucking idiot and just an asshole for no reason.
I still think this is a fantastically written and the Oscar.
I disagree.
Academy agree with me on that.
And I disagree as well, because if you look at the thing, the snippet that they showed from the fucking Oscars was horrible. Him playing, the guy bangs away at the drums and then his wife's like, hey, what's going on? Oh, nothing. Over. That's the whole movie to me.
So you obviously think that Wolf of Wall Street and Wall Street 2 are better than this.
By far.
Yeah. I put this in that company. All right, let's talk about another one that I may be decisive as well. Daddy's Home. I gave this one a surprise positive review a while back, I think two shows ago. Mm-hmm. This one really – I wasn't expecting much maybe, and I got a little bit more than that, and I was pleasantly surprised. What did you think?
You know, I'm not as up on this as you were, but I'm going to agree with you completely that I am really surprised the way that they cut this trailer was kind of ingenious because they left out –
most of the good stuff.
So much. Well, I don't know if it's most of the good stuff. It's just the extra. It's like the second half of the joke almost. Like you couldn't imagine there would be more to it, but then there was.
Yeah.
And so when you got to see it, you were like, oh, I've seen this in the trailer. And then bam, there's something else. So that was really cool.
I thought the joke wasn't funny in the trailer. So I had no intention of seeing this movie. I caught it mm-hmm. secondhand. And like you said, the byplay that they didn't include, thankfully didn't include in the trailer, and apparently they didn't need to because the pairing apparently is – I thought the pairing here in the movie is equal to the other guys. I really thought that this movie presented itself as a certain kind of Pat family film, and it was a little bit more edgy than I was expecting, to tell you the truth, directed by Sean Anders, who did That's My Boy, so I should have been expecting something. But I really thought that this was just going to be some kind of patronizing, pandering little bullshit, and it turned out to be slightly better than that. And because of that, I thought that it was one of the better Will Ferrell movies in a long time.
That's what I would say. I don't know if it was that good.
Tell me that last bit with John Cena wasn't good, though.
Yeah. It was okay. I don't know if it was that good. I mean, it's not rolling on the ground laughing or anything. It's a throwback to a joke that wasn't funny in the beginning of the film, but more of something that just happened. You know, the one thing that's hard about these movies is that they have to be grounded in some sort of reality. And in order to build that up, it kind of has to not be funny in a way. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of this movie that's not funny, that's actually kind of serious. And then there's ridiculous jokes in between, and they are funny, and it's not a bad movie. But it's kind of a very hard juggling act for these types of things. I don't know that this perfected. I think this dropped a couple balls here and there.
It's far from perfect, but like I said, it's the better Will Ferrell movie in a long time. I can't remember. Maybe Anchorman 2 is the last one that I enjoyed as much as this one.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, I mean, what's been recently? Get Hard.
Well, Anchorman 2 is dog shit, so.
Okay, well, we're going back. What am I saying, semi-pro?
Yeah, keep going, buddy. Like keep going, buddy.
Semi-pro is what I'm going with. You know, Step Brothers. I think they're starting to film Step Brothers 2 this summer, I heard.
Oh, really? So. Yeah, Step Brothers is wall-to-wall funny.
Yeah, that's just a classic. I could watch that more than Old School or Wedding Crashers or any of those kind of that whole era.
I'd agree, except for Wedding Crashers. I do like that, but yeah.
Speaking of old era, remember Nicolas Cage when he was a star?
Oh, no,
his
I don't.
Star has dimmed quite a bit. And
when did that happen?
I like Nicolas Cage. I'm just going to go out and say it. I've always liked Nicolas Cage. I find him to be a fascinating actor.
Closet cager.
In the right role. I mean, honestly, Lord of War, Matchstick Man, you can go mm-hmm. on and on with just great Nicolas Cage movies and performances.
Yeah, you can.
And unfortunately, as of late, he has really been stuck in some shit. But I will say this for the guy. Even though he's doing these B-movies, he's not doing the Steven Seagal routine where he shows up for a day and doesn't do his ADR and doesn't, you know, half-asses it a la Bruce Willis. He is actually putting energy and effort into these B-movies, which maybe makes it even worse because I think a professional team of editors, you know, like an A-list team of editors and directors can and producers can cut a performance right. And I just don't think that these B-movies are either the director, I don't know what the fuck, but they can't seem to get like a Cage performance right on screen. It's so erratic, you know what I mean? From yeah. scene to scene and almost shot to shot sometimes that you don't even know. It's like a fucking an homage, a collection of scenes from him. But Pay the Ghost is the recent one I saw, and this is the horror film of Nicolas Cage's career. I don't think he's done a horror film before. 8mm was kind of a horror film.
No, but, I mean, come on, 8mm Wicker Man. He's been in horror movies.
The Wicker Man. Okay, The Wicker Man. I did like The Wicker Man just for its weird appeal.
The Wicker Man is absolutely terrible, but go
it
on.
Is. But it's got a strange appeal, and it trips me out that it was directed by Neil LaBute.
Yeah,
that whole scenario.
I will tell you, 8mm you brought up. That's an excellent movie.
Yeah, 8mm is good. Cage has been in a lot of good movies, but Pay the Ghost, unfortunately, is not. It is streaming on Netflix if you want to do yourself a favor and check it out. But I say don't really check it out. If you're a Cage completionist,
don't
see
really,
it.
But kind but of.
He's got yeah. so many other ones that are out right now that you could check out instead. That like this one is really, really rancid. It really is. And he looks terrible in it. I don't know if he's trying – like he stayed up all – he's so method. He could have stayed up all night to like scare himself and stuff in a fucking castle. And he'd be like, I'm staying in the Hearst Castle.
He's just scaring himself. Yeah.
But I don't know what. He looked terrible in this
How's
movie.
How's he – I don't know how the hell –
Isn't he dumb paying back the IRS yet? Can we get Peter Keener to cast this
he
guy?
He just keeps going and going. He's like the Energizer Bunny, you know?
I mean, he's got to be making less than Dolph Lundgren per movie at this point.
Nah, I doubt that very much, but yeah.
I would love to know what – I mean, these guys, no joke. When you get somebody like Cage who has to be on the upper echelon of these
– Millions of dollars still, I believe.
You think
Come
1 to 3 million, I'd say?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
Okay. For these lower budget movies. He's got to be – You know, half, if not a quarter, of the budget for a lot of these.
Oh, easily. Easily. And you got to say that's a far cry from 20 years ago when he was commanding $20 million a movie. I mean, he was in that club for a while.
Yeah.
And he's an Oscar winner. I mean, Best Actor winner. So, although I do want to see The Trust, which I think is going to be we talked about that trailer two shows mm-hmm. back, which I think will be a nice throwback to the work he did once. Moving on to The Intern, talking about an actor who's dried up. Robert De Niro seems to be collecting paychecks, but in higher profile
dried up?
Films.
God, is that an old joke?
Well, he did a Dirty Grandpa, and he was very wet in that, so we got this one. Frisky little fucker.
Jeez. Yeah, this is a Nancy Meyers movie, and it's a very Nancy Meyers movie. For people who don't know who she is, you know, it's complicated, the holiday, something's got to give. You know, Father of the Bride. Right, my favorite, Jumpin' Jack Flash. But regardless, I'm just going to work Jumpin' Jack Flash and everything I possibly Savvy. Can now. So this is Robert De Niro playing very old, 70-year-old intern, or his wife's dead, he's got nothing to do. They finds out about the senior intern program at a upstart company and goes and applies. Anne Hathaway is the CEO of this thing, and it's kind of wearing on her life, and he basically is just this adorable old guy, you know, who comes in and kind of makes her see what's worth living for, you know, what's good, what's bad, you know, classic Nancy Meyer shit. Actually, there's really no bad in this movie, because there really is no bad in Nancy Meyer movies.
In Nancy Meyer's world, nobody is evil.
No.
Typically, I want to dropkick Ann Murphy, or Ann Murphy, good God, her too. Anne Murphy can get a dropkick any day as well. But,
I don't know what to tell you, because I like Anne Hathaway.
the fuck?
So, yeah, well.
Since when?
Since always. I've never said I've had a problem with her. You're the one that's got a problem with Anne Hathaway.
You went over the Princess Diaries. Was that when she got you?
That was definitely it. No, I've never seen.
They're doing part three. You know that, right?
Jesus Christ.
She's coming back. That's where her career is right now.
No, Oscar I've never seen it. But I do like Anne Hathaway. I've had no problem with her. So she was fine in this. I don't know. Let's tell you. I mean, it's Anne Hathaway, so you might not like it.
De Niro's okay, though? Or is he
De Niro's
just...
great. You know, he's just the nicest dude ever. Like, you know, you'd want him as your grandpa.
Not my dirty grandpa.
Oh, yeah.
You think you want him to your grandpa, definitely. And then go see Dirty Grandpa, and the first scene he's jerking off, and you're like, oh, it's that kind of movie.
Yeah. So it's exactly the kind of grandpa we all want.
It's exactly the opposite of this. He's like, all right, give me two scripts. I'm going to do this one. I'm going to do this one. All right, what's this? We got Pee-wee's Big Holiday.
Yeah.
Tell me about this one. This is the return of Pee-wee. Outside of the big first Pee-wee, what was it, a Big Adventure? I hated Big Top
the
Pee-wee.
First Pee-wee?
You know, the first Pee-wee.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, obviously Big Top Pee-wee. I mean, Pee-wee has never been good in movies. Aside from the first one, obviously, Tim Burton... you know, clearly had a lot to do with that. It was the darkness and the comedy and
playful tone too.
Yeah, there was just more Pee-wee in Big Adventure than in the other stuff. And the TV show is just for kids, you know, big time. And so this movie kind of doesn't really know where to land, you know. And it feels very childish throughout it. You know, except between, you know, Pee-wee. And what's his name? Joe Manganiello. My God. And they even make fun of his name, of course, in the movie, because Manganiello, who the hell can say this guy's name? Regardless, it's very homoerotic between the two of them. To the point where Pee-wee's pushing away, female characters and things throughout this entire movie. Just to get to, Joe's birthday party, where he's been invited to his birthday party. It's a very, I would say weird, but it's just kind of a stupid movie. He's kind of a Truman type guy. He lives in this little town, but he never wants to leave. Joe Manganiello shows up one day and invites him to his birthday party, and he decides he's going to go because they're, you know, they hit it off. They touch dicks, and they're like, and so.
And we just lost our sponsor from all the films.
So, yeah, and that's the whole movie. You know, it's just it's not funny. It's stupid and silly. And Paul Rubens, I read an article recently where he was talking about digital.
I mentally turned
digital. You just see it, right? There are several moments when you just think, you're just like, they're gonna kiss him. It's gonna happen.
After Interview with the Vampire, I'm good.
No, yeah. Yeah, that at least has a point. Anyhow, Paul Rubens was talking about the digital makeup and stuff they did on the face to de-age him or make him look really younger. Because to him, Pee-wee Herman is always young. You know, he's forever young. And that makes a lot of sense to me. But watching this movie, you can remove the wrinkles from someone's face, but they still, you know, wander around like an old man. And you can just see the flab and just the dude looks like, you know, he looks super old when he walks around and stuff. There's less pep in his step. It's just sad.
Trying to de-age himself and go back as like Police Academy 9. You know what I mean? Like you're going to look, you've aged.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Like his body is just, it looks like an old man's body.
It wouldn't be the same as Jim Carrey trying to go back and doing a young Ace Ventura. It wouldn't be the same.
Yeah. And so, the delivery I thought was less enthusiastic than we got in Big Adventure, and really just a subpar movie.
Yeah, I'd rather go back and watch Big Adventure again.
Yeah, I would recommend that over this.
Well, you saw a movie that I put on our shared Netflix queue list there to watch, a Jim Jarmusch film called Dead Man that I've never seen. And you texted me and said it was fantastic. It withstood the test of time and is still a masterpiece. And I was like, I've never seen it. I'm dying to watch it. So... tell me about this thing, because this is the Mistaken Identity Western, right?
Yeah, it's not. It is a mistaken identity to a point. It's really not. Because he really does kill people and do all these things. He just kind of falls into it, if you will.
He's not the author that somebody thinks he is, but yet bounty hunters are after him regardless, correct?
He kills people, not on accident, you know, on purpose. But because he's in a situation that he maybe shouldn't be in. And then it continues on until the end where he just really is, you know, just he kind of becomes the man they think he is in a way. Because people are after him, you know, everyone that he meets is really just a horrible human being and is trying to kill him.
Except for the Native American. I'm slightly fascinated with pre-Pirates Johnny Depp movies.
This movie's
like
incredible.
Nick of Time, the Astronaut's Wife, The Ninth Gate. You know what I mean? Like this the movie, ninth gate, shit like yeah. that.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a weird film. It's black and white. Neil Young guitar riffs through the whole thing. And that's essentially the soundtrack. And in a way, those two things make this movie damn near timeless because it just works. You know, there's nothing. And because it is a period piece, you know, it takes place in the 1800s during the Wild Wild West. Right. So it's just, you know, you can't really place this movie could have been made today. You know, you can't really place where this is. And it's so weird. It's such an odd film.
Well, that's Jim Jarmusch, you know, films, right? Like
it is Jim Jarmusch, yeah.
The movie exists in its deviations in a weird way, you know. Always,
yeah.
Always.
I mean, this movie is stitched together, you know, fading in a lot.
Yeah. So is so is Ghost Dog, yes. which I just recently watched.
Yes. So it's definitely
not directed smoothly typically.
The same way, but I mean, even Ghost Dog is, you know, it's set in that time period. It's marked, you know, for its age. This movie just feels. I don't know. I would say timeless is the thing. I can imagine watching this in 20 years from now and still thinking, huh, you know, if I didn't live through the independent film era, and clearly this is from that era.
Oh, yeah.
Big
this
time.
This is a Miramax release from that era.
Yeah. This is real big time. Like, if you've seen any of the other films come out around this time, you know, it's like it really is perfect for that. But if you hadn't seen any of those, you wouldn't know when this was made, probably, you know.
I think you got to warn people that Jim Jarmusch is a very acquired taste. I haven't.
This is a really weird fully. Movie. Really weird movie, yeah.
I don't appreciate all of his work, but I do like Ghost Dog for its.
That's what I think. If you like Ghost Dog, I really think Ghost Dog and this are probably the most mainstream, I would say, the most tolerable from just a random person coming in and watching these.
That's a fair
The other ones get a little. I guess I'm maybe not even weirder, but just.
They're more eclectic. Yeah, I mean, like say. Cigarettes and Coffee, I couldn't get through.
Yeah, me neither.
Like I just it's they're too independent for my liking. Too wandering. All right, tell me about Sicario because I've been dying to watch this, and I'm going to watch this week. I wanted to watch this so we could talk about it together on the show, but fuck it. Let me know what you think. Let her rip.
yeah, so I did like Sicario. It's a great thriller action movie. Unfortunately, it kind of gives everything away in the trailer. So if you've seen the trailer, you really know the movie, and it tries to have twists, but I mean, it really just spells it out for you from the very beginning.
I think this was positioned as like a movie like Traffic, but the trailer reminded me of The Kingdom. Remember that good one we got from Peter
Berg?
Was it much like that?
Both of those much better movies than this. I do like the direction and the action, as well as the acting. In this are really great. It's just the storylines just, you know, like I say, just gives it away. And so you're just sitting there kind of waiting for it. And they take this Emily Blunt character and really make her stupid, you know? And again, she's kind of like, you're way ahead of her, you know? She's just kind of like, I don't know what's going on. I need to figure this out. And you're like, God, bitch, you know, we know exactly what's going on. You know, if you could hear me, I would tell you.
I know, you know, you and I both were told in film school to let the audience stay a little bit in front of the characters, but not too far ahead because it bores you.
I agree. I mean, sometimes it can work, but you have to do it right. You know, it has to be, I don't know. This is a good idea, but maybe they were a little too overzealous and excited about having this idea in that they gave it away with the title alone, right? Gives the whole entire movie away. And when they define the title at the very beginning of the movie in subtitles, you know, they have text that comes up and explains to you. And then you think, well, fuck, I know the movie. So it kind of ruins it a little bit. But great performances. You know, good direction. I do really think that it's unfortunate that they make this character so stupid. She's very weak as well throughout this entire movie. She gets owned so much, you know. And, it, you know, I understand, you know, the female characters oftentimes, you know, there's a weakness in physicality there. But to also have that show through in you know, mental ways is kind of makes the whole thing. She's a very weak character. That's all I can say. Even up
but
to
you
the
do
very
recommend
end.
The film.
I would recommend the film to watch for very reasons. If you liked, you know, Traffic would be the movie. I would say this is a much lesser movie than that. But if you do like those types of thriller cop movies, then yeah, it's worth a watch.
All right. So what do you have for a streaming online pick this week? I got in 2006. Got 19. Remember that decade?
1906? What?
1906 movie called A Trip to the Moon. No, this is from 2006. A Phil Yananoa. I never said that guy. Starring Dwayne Johnson. Kind of the forgotten rock film, if you will. And no, it's not The Rundown or Walking Tall. It is Gridiron Gang, the film based off a documentary about a teacher that takes on a troubled youth and forms a football team. This came out in the wake of Friday Night Lights, which was having a fantastic run on television, really hitting creative heights there, and kind of got lost in that shadow after the movie version of that. And I don't know why this didn't score better. It just, it's a good, good movie, and it's beautifully shot and nicely directed and really unsentimental. And since I just saw McFarlane USA again, which I mm-hmm. think was really, really good Disney film, it's like the antithesis of the Disney sports movies, if you will. So
there was something I know I don't like that movie. There was something about that movie I didn't like. It was something to do with the story. I can't remember what it was.
I liked that movie quite a bit.
I know you did like the movie, even when we spoke about it when it came out
10 years ago.
You just screamed out earlier. I know. I remember you liked it. I just remember I did. There was something about it I didn't like.
I can't recall what it was.
I think you seemed like it was. I haven't seen it in a long time. Yeah, that's what it was. I'm going to throw out Halt and Catch Fire Season 2, which is now available on Netflix. If you're not watching Halt and Catch Fire, you're missing out on the greatest show on television right now. So watch it. Check it out. If you're a computer nerd, you're going to love it. If you just like shows about business, you'll love it. If you like shows about drama, you'll love it.
Yeah, I agree.
Just watch it.
I was going to say that, but I figured you were going to do it, so I didn't think it would be any use for you both hawking that. So, no, I agree with you, though. It's I haven't seen Season 2 quite yet, but Season 1 is fantastic. A&E has a fantastic show on their hands. I don't know why this hasn't
– AMC.
AMC, thank you. Mr. Roboto seems to be getting all the kind of audience that this should be getting, which isn't a bad show, but it's not
really,
this show.
I don't like it. Mr. Robot's silly and stupid. This show is fun. And genuine, and the characters, every single one of those characters works. This is a perfectly casted show and wonderfully written. And the technology is so much fun. Only 10 episodes. But this is the kind of show that I can't stop watching, and I love the theme song. You know, I really like Netflix does this thing now where it skips the opening credits, which is great for most things. But I'm so glad that they have these opening credits after shit that you have to watch so it can't skip it. Because this theme song and the opening credits just set the mood and tone for the show perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Great show. So watch it, guys. Season 2 is available on Netflix and I believe on Amazon as well. All right, let's get to the trailers.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay. We don't got time for that shit. We got lots of trailers.
We ain't got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. All right, we got X-Men Apocalypse, which is officially the 114th X-Men movie in the last 15 years. And no, this is like, what, the third in the new series, which is the first in
which hopefully
the
is the last movie, right? Are we done?
No, because there's a Wolverine 3 coming out, which is technically like X-Men 12, right? I don't know. I was lost like in 2009 when they did that really bad Wolverine movie. I kind of stopped giving a fuck. And then these First Class one came out, and it piqued my interest. That last one was pretty good. And this one, this trailer, I finally understand one of these X-Men trailers. I figured follow the whole storyline.
You finally understand.
Well, usually there's got all these characters and they give like a brief reference, like the fucking biblical figures. I'm supposed to just know who they are off the top of my head. I'm like,
I think you just described this trailer.
I don't know. I just like the fact that they're in the 80s, I guess. I saw some Miami Vice references.
Aren't they
there,
fighting a god in this one? This just looks like every other X-Men Marvel movie to me. Same thing, different day. Right? It's the end of the world. They're going to destroy everything. A godlike monster comes and shows up, and he gets his recruits together, and these are the bad guys, and these are the good guys. And once again, we hear, you're no longer students. You're now your X-Men. It's like, okay, well, haven't we done this before?
Yeah, about 12 other times. That's why this is like the 12 fucking X-Men movie. And I love the fact that they got Jennifer Lawrence front and center in these things now. Like the first class movie there, she's this chubby little thing in the background. Now she's running shit in the trailer. But I just want you to be more like Magneto. All right, let's move on. Less said about X-Men, the better. Let's talk about this Ben-Hur trailer that is clearly positioning itself as somewhere between an action film and a religious epic is what I felt like.
What the hell is this?
It reminded me of that movie that just came out called Risen with Joseph Fiennes that was out in the theaters currently.
This movie so badly wants to be Gladiator and
Pompeii. God, what and else? Anything else
yeah,
you got.
Jeez. Yeah. It's kind of, Does this totally miss the grandeur of the original?
It doesn't even have a shot or anything of spectacle. There's not a moment of wonder.
It feels so basic. Right? It feels like a straight-to-DVD version of these types of movies.
I think things that are being shown on History Channel and things like that are comparable at this point. I'm serious. Some
no,
of those,
you're
like,
right. I know.
Have, you know, like, it is nothing, not from the casting to not one shot.
To the plot, to people. Anything. I mean, what does he say in this? The guy says, get up, brother, what is something fight some line like that? That's clearly the line, you know, that's supposed to be the equal to "Are we not entertained yet?"
Right. Yeah. Aren't we having fun? Is what he
says. Yeah, that's what he says. Are we having fun yet, brother? Or something. But yeah, it's clearly the mirror of the Gladiator.
And Morgan Freeman shows up in this to try to give it some sort of credence. Or
silly. Is this the character from Robin Hood? I mean, the first half of this trailer feels like Robin Hood. And there's never been a good Robin Hood, so I can't say the bad or good Robin Hood, but the Kevin Costner Robin Hood. And then the last half feels like a Gladiator ripoff. And like you say, it does look like something that would appear on TV or straight to DVD.
First of all, I would argue you about that Robin Hood slight you just made there, sir.
You can argue all you want. I've recently watched the Kevin Costner one. It's terrible.
That's why I can't argue with you. I can't get through the fucking thing anymore. But I think that's because I watched it so many times as a kid.
Please. You can come up with any excuse you want to. It's terrible.
It exists in my mind's memory fine. So.
It does. I wiped the recent viewing I have of it, and I just remember when I was a kid because it was awesome back then.
I'll leave it back in 91. We'll be good then. But no, I think Morgan Freeman has some mortgage payments to make because he's in this, and London Has Fallen, and he's just cashing out fucking paychecks right now. So be careful there with your legacy there, sir.
Yeah, well, if not for him showing up, and perhaps a couple of other faces, you wouldn't know this was a big-budget movie.
He's the only one thought at all that I recognized.
He was? I can't really remember at this point.
And the lead actor, I mean, maybe they were going for casting a somewhat unknown, thinking that was going to help, but that didn't help Pompeii. That didn't help The Legend of Hercules. And that's what this looks like on the level of that. I know this is going for a Gladiator and those kind of like Troy and Alexander and the ones that are really trying to be ambitious, but this looks like a lower tier.
I mean, just comparing this to those movies you just said, I mean, even Troy just puts this to shame. Like, I don't understand how this got made.
That's kind of the unfortunate fact, even with Alexander, which is a deeply flawed film,
which
but we
still
got
looks
those
way
movies.
Better than this.
Yeah, we got Troy, Alexander, and Gladiator in such a close period of time that it was kind of hard to see how good one another was in comparison to all the shit that followed in its wake. And really, Troy, I was very hard on initially, and I've grown to like it more.
But
and
it's
more
quite good, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't say it's excellent. It's not Gladiator, but at the same
no,
time,
it's not.
Extremely watchable.
But not many are, you know. I think
the way it was sold as a vanity project for Pitt with his long flowing hair and whatnot.
We were cheated a bit by growing up in the Braveheart and Gladiator years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then having these other movies try to come and you know.
Even Rob Roy doesn't get enough props.
Yeah, Rob Roy's awesome.
Let's talk about Now You See Me 2, the follow-up to the inexplicable box office smash from a couple years back. A film I never cared for.
Really? You didn't like the first one?
I did not like the first movie.
I was going to say, you know, the first one I didn't think I would like, but then I really kind of did like, you know, it was silly fun and, you know, reversals and weirdness and all this. And I have a feeling you're going to like, you say you're going to like this one a little bit more. I think this looks great.
No, I think this looks even fucking worse.
Oh, I think this looks good. Yeah, this looks totally.
Are you serious?
Because this is so different than any direction I thought they would have gone in.
I the second that things started going bad at the conference,
just the
fucking face behind him, I thought,
upset that Isla Fisher has been replaced by Lizzie Kaplan.
I am on that. I 100% for that.
I love them both, but she was pregnant. She couldn't be in it, all right?
She's pregnant? I'm heartbroken. In real life?
Mm-hmm. She had a kid. She's married to what's his name, you know?
She's Borat. Married to Borat, son of a bitch. She's pregnant?
Oh, she probably had the kid by now.
I didn't know she. That's acceptable. They couldn't get Kate Mara. She'd be a good replacement. Kind of looks the same.
Lizzie Kaplan's great.
Yeah, all right. We'll take her for what she is. But at this point, the story though, I just felt like when that news that big like spectacle went bad, and then they go down the tube.
And Harry Potter showed up.
And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, you know what it reminded me of? The most unnecessary sequel since FX2.
You shut your mouth.
You, sir, have not seen FX 1 and 2 in a long time.
I love those movies. I have not seen them in a long time.
The mechanical clown. Get the fuck out of here. I had to sit through those many times.
Those didn't make you want to be a special effects artist.
No, they did, but then I grew up and watched them again, and I was like, these movies are shite.
They probably are. I haven't seen them.
FX 2 especially. This reminded me of FX 2, where it's like, hey, we need a sequel. Sure, I got an idea, and it's like a left field fucking sequel. It's like Beastmaster 2. What are we going to do, a Portal of Time next?
I think this looks good. This clearly has a Portal of Time in it, so I think you're right on the money on that one. And that really did make that a wonderful film.
I was at a Comic Con this weekend, I'm not ashamed to say, in Silicon Valley.
Dressed as Beastmaster.
No, I was dressed as Tomb Raider.
If anyone's seen Community, one of the great parts of Community is season one where Chevy Chase dresses as the Beastmaster.
I know, that is a great sequence. No, but they did have, one of the booths had the Beastmaster 2 Portal of Time soundtrack, and I thought, sir, did you make this up? I think this is an official release.
What did they have on it?
I didn't even look. I just was stunned that it was even there. Probably just
was
some
it,
hair metal bands.
Was it an audio cassette?
It was a CD. It was pressed.
Oh, please.
Exactly. I think he burned it onto a fucking burnt disc. Anyways, getting back to these. So you're all for Now You See Me Too. You think this is, I mean, if this goes on to part three.
I think this looks like fun.
Fun. The first one sucked.
The first one was fun.
First one was like a bad superhero.
I mean, it's not a very good movie, but it was a fun movie.
I thought these were like low rent versions of what The Kingsman could have been. This is an example of how The Kingsman sucked, what it could have turned out to be.
I mean, nothing compares to The Kingsman, though.
Yeah, Kingsman is good. Part two of that is shooting
this
year.
How are you
going to
do that?
So.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. All right, next we have Tim Burton's latest, Miss Peregrinis.
Peregrinis.
Peregrinis. All right, say Madea.
Madea?
There you go. All right, so Mrs. What you said.
Mrs. Peppergardens.
Home for Peculiar Children.
Home for Peculiar Children.
Based on the best-selling novel, this is Tim Burton returning into that fantastical land.
And you should love this, because this is X-Men 13.
No, this is Big Fish territory, in my opinion. I like this.
B-Men. I should say this is B-Men.
You didn't care for this trailer.
I thought this looked perfectly fine. It is clearly X-Men. I mean, I know that you're trying to compare it to other Tim Burton stuff, but this is Tim Burton does X-Men.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, let's be honest. I really, really like that there's a dark side to this that they didn't show you in this, but in little snippets and stuff. So that really tells me this is going to be, kind of a Harry Potter-ish type tale, which is kind of the full circle of everything. You're going to get a little bit of everything with this movie. You're going to get the wonder. You're going to get the scares. You're going to get really sucked into this world.
I like when Tim Burton does these off-color things. And Eva Green, who's starring
looks
here.
Looks fantastic in this.
She was fantastic, I thought, in the very underrated 300 sequel. And
Dark
very,
Shadows,
very
I thought she was
Shadows.
Good in. Yeah.
Yes, which is an underrated movie all around. I think that's a very, very good
I would
good
agree
movie.
With you.
But I think she's doing good work here in this trailer with that girl who looks like she exists in a Tim Burton movie just to begin with the big eyes there.
I think all of them, yeah. Really pretty well cast.
Yeah, I'm willing to see this and excited about the news that Burton and company are reuniting for Beetlejuice 2 next.
Ooh.
This is coming. So get this one out of the system. Get this Alice in Wonderland 2, which I know he's just executive producing. It's kind of like when he executive producered Batman Forever. So get these out of your system.
Wonderland Forever.
Let's get back to your roots here, Burton. All right, let's talk about The Shallows. This is a trailer that was released just recently, starring Blake
Lively.
Really
just a teaser.
Really a teaser, but this is one of those stranded kind of movies. This is about a surfer.
Weren't we just talking about shark movies? We couldn't think of very many shark movies.
Yeah, we were talking about last show. We were talking about Meg being made.
Yeah, and whatnot. And so here's a shark. I forgot all about this movie, actually, until you mentioned this. And I think this looks pretty damn good for a shark movie. The shots of the shark, it looks fucking huge. But it looks within realistic proportions. It's not Jaws size, but it's big enough to be scary as shit. And I like that they've stranded her on this little island, which clearly the tide is probably going to come in and screw her. Right? And so they're in shallow areas. She looks like she's been scuba diving maybe or something, and she's been washed up against the rocks or something, hurt her leg real bad. Now she's up on this little tiny little coral like island thing, and the shark's just circling her.
It's in the shallows, which is, you know, because El Nino's, all these sharks are doing weird things now, they're saying this year. And I got the impression that she was in a wetsuit that was ripped in the very beginning, and that she maybe was surfing or something like that in the shallows.
Yeah, possibly surfing, yeah. Sure.
But I want to say, first of all, that that opening shot of her coming to with the bathing suit on was about the nicest thing I've seen since Into the Blue with Jessica Alba. So already I was hooked, line and sinker. And, you know, and a certain thing is that, like, she has a certain
I'd be careful. That's Deadpool's girl.
I know, but I've always liked her, so. Nah. And, he got Scarlett Johansson, too. So, I mean, come on. Life just isn't fair sometimes. But I think that she has a certain screen vulnerability, and that's going to come through in this movie. And I do think this is going to be a sleeper hit this summer. I really do. This looks like a movie that audiences are going to be talking about. And as long as they don't bend – these are the kind of movies that at some point or other people go, oh, well, she did this, and in real life that wouldn't happen. It's a fucking movie, okay?
I think those are great, especially when you're talking about a horror movie, and you need a – you know, I love the strong heroine in horror movies type stuff, and I think she's a great casting for this. She seems like she's going to be strong enough – you know, physically it looks like to be able to do some stuff, even though she's wounded here, obviously, so she can't swim. But mentally as well, you know, I think she's going to play the role real well. And, I just wonder what they do with the shark. Cause you know, in real life, if that big shark wanted her, it would just
get her.
It would just shoot up through the air, right? It would just go get her. Yeah. So I wonder how this plays out.
Yeah. It makes you, it's a great teaser. And I hope that the full length trailer doesn't give away too much more when that premieres, but this does come out this summer. And depending on the plot points, if they don't get too outlandish, I do think this is going to be a
sleeper. As long as she winds up in love with a shark, I'll be okay.
I mean, I'm already in love with her, so we'll even. She gets the pass. All right, let's talk about Sausage Party. This is the R-rated animated film from Seth Rogen and the writers of Superbad. And I initially thought this was a little too cute for its own good and then laughed out loud two or three times. This is the Red Band trailer we're talking about, R-rated version. I think this looks good. I don't know where they're going to go with this in feature length, but for – 3-minute trailer, I did laugh.
Yes, this has just a shitload of actors. And, you know, James Franco, Seth Rogen, Kristen Wiig, Paul Rudd, Edward Norton, Salma Hayek, Jonah Hill, right? Michael Cera. The list goes on and on. Danny McBride, Bill Hader, Nick Kroll. They got Craig Robinson. They got all the guys
their voices,
in this. And, of course, we knew that all these guys were going to come in and do this stuff. We heard the idea for this early on. We both kind of mocked it a little bit. I think after seeing as a trailer, as something real, I think this looks fucking hysterical.
Yeah, this is about a package of sausages who gets taken home.
Just laughed like crazy. Yeah, well, it's about food, right? Food in general really wants to be bought and taken home, right? Yeah, and they want to be a part of the party and they want to do it, but they don't understand that they're going to be killed and everything. And tell me that when she starts skinning the potato and shit, and it just goes, fuck me. You're just like, oh my God, this is fucking hysterical, right?
Yeah.
Trying to just killing the food and like crazy things. When she gets the baby carrots, like they're killing fucking children and shit. Like, ah! And so, and in the end, basically this movie turns out to be, as you say, the sausage who has to go back to the store, right? He wants to go back to the store and warn all the food. You know, don't be bought, you know. They're going to kill you.
It's a great idea. Maybe one of the most stonery of stonerist ideas from Rogen and company. But inexplicably is working. I don't know. In this trailer, at least.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would, but it does. I mean, the cursing really helped.
Yeah, which I thought it was going to be a gimmick, but it wasn't. I mean, maybe it is in the movie, but for the trailer, it worked.
It worked, yeah.
All right, let's talk about The Lobster, a very, very peculiar independent film starring Colin Farrell, a very pudgy Colin Farrell, that is, too. I mean, he must have gained 50 pounds for this role, it looks like.
Well, he has to be unwanted, right?
And depressed. I mean, this is remind me of Joaquin Phoenix and Her in a lot of ways with the mustache and the downtrodden
similar
kind
of a dystopian, not really a future, but an alternate universe in this one. Yeah. So he plays a... basically a single guy. He's old. When you get to a certain age, if you've never found a mate, they send you off to this hotel. And you have to find a partner in 45 days or you turn into an animal. And you run off into the woods and then you have another chance as an animal, right, to become or to find a mate. And it's already, right, sounds weird. But I really thought this was kind of intriguing. And I love the idea that in the trailer, at least, there appears to be an alternate city that's nearby where people are not allowed to be together. Is that what you got from this? And he meets a girl from that city out in the woods. They both somehow come into contact with each other and he falls for her.
I got so many different things.
Is that the same?
This.
Is that what I got from this?
I'm sure that was in there, but I got so many other things too that John C. Reilly was somehow trying to sabotage him. And
well, because he wasn't supposed to be with this other girl, probably. That's what I got from that.
I thought this looked at first I thought, oh man, here we go with this kind of very self-aware independent film. But by the end of it, I was extremely intrigued with what was going on here, mostly because it did remind me of a Her / Another Earth type idea, you know, where it was such a strange idea. And they had certain shots in there, and the idea of reincarnation, if you will, led me to believe that there was some sort of spirituality to this too, that they weren't totally letting on to in this trailer. That
if he falls for this girl, right, that's not from the hotel and stuff, then obviously his 45 days are going to be up there. And so that was kind of what I was thinking with the John C. Reilly stuff, was that they were out after him to stop him from doing stuff with these other people. Like, he had to do something with them, right, in the hotel.
Yeah, but very intriguing too. I'll say that this trailer at least deserves to be watched, even if you don't watch the movie. At least watch this trailer.
I agree. I think this will be great. I think this will wind up on Netflix, you know.
Very soon.
Yeah. But it looks good.
Speaking of a Netflix ready film, let's talk about Dead 7, which is sci-fi /
Well, it's cable ready.
This is cable premiere. This is basically the Asylum Western that pits all of your
that you didn't know you wanted
members of the 90s boy bands NSYNC.
Least favorite.
Boys. Well, they don't have like.
They don't
honest.
Have your favorite.
Well, Justin Timberlake's not coming back. I don't think.
Just JT is good.
I don't think 98 Degrees is involved in this.
I'm gonna talk to him about that. Why aren't you in this movie, buddy?
Yeah, I want to know where Nick Lachey is at. I want to know why 98 Degrees wasn't invited to this party. Got fucking O Town here.
Oh God.
I mean, what's the next date of Jade?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Nick Carter wrote this. I'm just gonna put that out there.
That depresses the fuck.
Nick
Carter has a published screenplay, and we don't.
Well, he co-wrote
it. Depresses the fuck. He couldn't.
Let's put it this way. Sawyer Perry is credited with the screenplay, so I actually don't know what Nick Carter did on this. If he just came up with the idea, but he certainly spearheaded this in some fashion. But I mean, fuck me. Is this clearly, you know, from the makers of Sharknado, kind of says it all, right?
Yeah, this is a casting gimmick type situation.
This is what they do now.
This in the year after the Expendables, when a lot of companies tried to pull this.
But the Asylum has just done this forever, right? These guys they didn't really invent this, but they've definitely capitalized on this the most.
I'm surprised they didn't get members of Making the Band from season 2, 3, and 5. Assorted members of assorted people from American Idol. I mean, what's next?
It's really scary that all these things are right at the tip of your tongue.
I know.
I feel like you're pop culture. I think you're a boy band fanatic.
Shh. I got more. I got more, buddy. I'll sing Una Noche to you right now.
Well, there is no Menudo in this, so.
No, but hey. My mom loved Ricky Martin back in the day. She was crushed when he came out. Crushed. She took my sister to see Ricky Martin. They sat front row. My sister fell asleep. That's when I knew he was gay. Let's move it along. Anyhow, let's talk about the holidays here. Not literally the holidays, but this genre movie. Film, this horror anthology.
Yeah,
which is basically like the New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day films, but set over different horror stories that look like to be set over New Year's Eve, Christmas, Valentine's Day, and some other holidays throughout the year.
Yeah, I think this looks really good.
Really good. A great trailer.
For anthology
I don't know
thing.
About the film, but this trailer is cut very well.
I think the film looks good too. You know, I'm excited to see a movie that doesn't. You know, clearly there's some crazy aspects to this. There looks like a monster in here.
But at least a slasher portion.
That's what I'm
just
going to say. There's slasher and stuff. There's real life horror in this. It looks like, and I'm glad to see that again. That was something that I liked from VHS. You know, that it had that alternate slasher horror stuff in it as well. Not just it wasn't just monsters and whatnot, which is what we get a lot today because I love special effects.
It was
so glad to see some old school horror. Yeah, I'm also glad to see, you know, Kevin Smith is in the mix here, writing and directing a segment of this, and also apparently in this. Although I didn't notice him in the trailer.
I like the idea that we get different different aspects of the horror stuff all in one, because I like Tales from the Crypt. I like Twilight Zone. I like these little – I think horror stories to me work best as short stories.
The
feature film doesn't work that much.
Oh, I love that this is clearly rated R and that there's blood and gore, and that it is not just – you know, it's not just something that's scary, but it's – to me, the things that are scary are the situations, the things that you see in movies in your eyes that you could possibly walk into in real life and see. That's me is absolutely frightening.
That, to me, that's why I think that – I know it was a redo of a famous Twilight Zone episode starring Burt Reynolds, coincidentally.
I think no coincidence, my friend. No coincidence you remember that.
It is. And William Shatner as well is the guy who sees it. But is the gargoyle on the airplane wing? I mean, who hasn't been in an airplane and thought they saw something for a second outside? I mean, those are the kind of situations. But my problem with horror, like I said, has always been that I think it works best in a short story format or a short film format. I think feature film horror movies tend to lose my interest because after a while, I'm not that interested in that slasher anymore or that ghost or that monster. But yet when you have one of these that every few minutes is changing to a different one, I think it holds – I know it does. Like VHS and VHS 2 held my attention a lot more than, say – Ouija or Oculus or whatever you want to, you know, whatever horror.
It's hard. Well, Oculus actually kind of did hold my attention, even though I didn't find it very good. But yeah, I agree with you. I am tending to veer towards these anthologies much more when they're done right. When they're done poorly, even a little bit, they really are really bad.
Oh, I agree. But when a lot of them that are done poorly, like Record, all those ones are really bad.
Yeah, but when done correctly, as you say, you know, it does work better in the small format. And I love being able to bounce from style to style, story to story like this, you know. And to me, these are very different than the drama or the romantic anthologies, if you will. Because even though some of these do have a tether to them where, there's a singular storyline that kind of ties everything together. I never get lost in these thinking one is more apparently better than the other, or one is, you know, actually should have been the entire movie.
Now, hell though, I mean, as kids, I remember Creepshow 1 and 2, a movie called The Willies. Remember The Willies?
Yeah.
Kind of the kids' version of Creepshow. My friends and I in Twilight Zone, we would, you know, debate which segment was the best one, especially in the first Creepshow.
Yes.
You know, which one was the best one? I used to like the Howard Hughes Bugs one. My friend liked the one where Ted Danson got buried at the beach.
I like that one, yeah.
And my other friend liked the one where Stephen King was the guy who finds the meteor, you know, and gets the green shit on him. And then my other friend liked Creepshow 2. He really loved the one with the kids are on the raft, you know, in the middle of the lake, and he had to swim from the blob. So we would
just
debate,
makes me want to watch those, right?
Right. And remember the one where the lady hits the hits the guy hitchhiking.
Yeah.
So we would debate about the merits of these segments. You know what I mean?
That one was the scary.
Yeah, all that. And the Wooden Indian one was the one that nobody universally liked at all. Remember that one?
Yeah.
The Wooden Indian came to life. But those, like, and they were always tethered by, you know, like kind of the kid that was in the comic shop or this,
the guy that came,
story type.
The guy that came back, there was a zombie that came back to his girlfriend.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
That one was creepy as fuck. He tried not to be a zombie, tried to be like, no, I'm not going to be a zombie. I'm going to be in love with my girlfriend. But in the end, you know, bit the shit out.
Well, there's also Tales from the Dark Side, you know, the gargoyle.
Right.
You'd never tell. You know, remember that one? Where it's a great twist ending. So we would debate the merit of these segments, and I think that anthologies are great to bring that kind of stuff back, because I think it gets a younger generation interested in horror again. And they say horror dies out at times, but never fully goes away. But I think right now we are at a very, very weak time for the horror film. I think it needs a reinvention of some sort.
Well, if boy bands don't do it, I say we just give up.
There we go. I think Nick Carter is the one to spearhead it. All right. Last trailer for tonight is High Rise. This is a very European thriller starring Tom Hiddleston, Loki from The Avengers or from Crimson Peak, if you will.
Sienna Miller's in this, too.
She is in this. Good. And this is a movie to me that looks like Dread and Snowpiercer.
Jeremy Irons. Mix,
right? I mean, what's
going on? I would agree with you on that. Obviously, clearly, we've traded out a train for a high-rise apartment building.
Same political conflicts, though, right? Or
yeah, same deal, though. The higher you are, right, the
better life.
The better you are, I guess, yeah.
The lower they literally levels have are crap. More power, right? They have more electricity.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a Dread type thing, you know, right? Where the street level is the dog shit, and that's where all the bad things are happening. And then the higher you go in the buildings, you know, the more secure things become. Although I think this looks way better than Ice, whatever the hell it is. Was it? Not Icebreaker.
Snowpiercer,
yeah, whatever. Fucking
Snowpiercer was
movie.
A great trailer in a mediocre movie.
It was a wonderful idea for a movie. It's a terrible movie. And so I think, oh no, terrible's true.
It's a long movie.
It's a terrible movie. It really is. I mean, there's no way around it, man.
It's okay.
It's fucking bad. No, it's not okay. It's bad.
I always want to like that movie, and I just try to like it. But the individual ideas in that movie are
give
good.
Give in to the dark side.
This movie, I think, will have the same issue, though. I think that unless
I disagree, because
plot,
number one, this isn't made by an Asian fellow. So I don't think it's going to have the same issues that had. Because Snowpiercer is very Asian. And I really think that's what killed it in the end. While that works for some things, not so much for that movie. But as you say, this is more European, and I think that fits us a little bit better. And I really, I don't know, I liked all the different layers to this, right? I mean, Tom Hiddleston's character is kind of in the middle of it, and he wants to go up, obviously, but at some point he's kind of appalled at what he finds out is what's happening up above him in comparison and contrast to all the shit that everyone below has to deal with. And possibly we're dealing with a revolution right in this building.
It looked to me very Cronenberg-esque as well. I thought that in his hands, you'd probably see something akin to what we saw here, because it looks to be even Ex Machina. I felt like some Alex Garland type influence here. I couldn't get my beat or figure out what beat it was here, but at some point it looked like there was even a sci-fi angle that was happening. Did
yeah,
you get
I
that
agree.
At all?
Yeah,
like, but like more sci-fi than that.
Totally.
Were
I mean, clearly,
showing.
Just with the buildings in general, but then having horses and stuff, and having different sections of it's almost kind of like having different sections of a spaceship or something. You know,
I wouldn't be surprised to find out that they weren't necessarily on Earth; that they're on some sort of distant planet, right? I thought this trailer looked very good, though. I do want to see this, although this is going to be a very, very minor release here.
Yeah, this will be available on Netflix in a week.
Yeah, exactly. This comes on iTunes April 28th and theaters May 13th for a limited run. But yeah,
exactly.
May 20th, it'll be on Netflix. Well, that's going to wrap up our show tonight for episode 298. We want to thank you all for joining us on this episode. As always, you can catch our past podcasts at MovieMavericks.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe, or wherever else they may be carrying your podcasts. Next, we'll be back with a retrospective episode of The Last Boy Scout, Trevor's pick for the next one. Ooh. And we'll be back with you guys, as always, the following week with a regular podcast. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!